everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of the Low Carb Universe show. This is actually number 50 in a row, and I got a very exciting guest with me today. It's Dr. Angharad Powell. Welcome, Angharad.
Hello. Hi, Peter. Lovely to hear your voice.
The thing is with Angharad that we discovered this lady a couple of years ago. I was watching a BBC documentary. Very interesting, and suddenly, very interesting, but quite, you know. And then this Angharad shows up on screen, and she had a lot of energy and very sound things to tell people. And I spoke to Hannah, my colleague, and we said, oh, we need to have her for our very first event. And you couldn't make it then, and we've invited you several times since. And now, finally, we're having you over for the Keto Ladies event in March. That is so great.
Yes, I'm so excited to finally be able to come. It's been, I can't believe it's been a long journey since we first spoke back in 2016. So, it's really very excited to be joining you.
I hope it was worth it, because there's a lot of pressure on you now. You know, we've got great expectations.
Oh, goodness.
No worry. I know we all love you. So Angharad, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a doctor. I'm a general practitioner, so a sort of family doctor, sort of at the moment living between the UK and Cyprus. I'm working as a locum, so I'm kind of very flexible and getting to work in lots of different jobs, and which is great. I came really first to low carb back in 2013, when there was an editorial, or two editorials, published in the BMJ in April of that year, one by Robert Lustig and on obviously on sugar, and the other was the Garrett sort of introduction, really a summary of Gary Taubes's views. And I think, you know, both those just totally shook my world and set me on that journey of reading that many of us have been on, that to this world that we didn't really perhaps know even existed. And and so then I, you know, as with many doctors who end up low carb, started off with, you know, a lot of skepticism and a lot of concern over my cholesterol and all those type of things. But, you know, started eating low carb and realized, you know, having been someone who'd really struggled with my weight, and to put it in context, I'd had my first baby about 12 months, coming up 12 months before that, and had managed to gain pretty much up to my sort of full term weight back on in the 6 months after I'd had her. So I was feeling at this point pretty big, pretty miserable, feeling like, how am I ever going to get the weight off? Because, you know, every time I went on the scales, another 3 pounds was on. And I just thought, you know, and obviously the opportunity to try and, you know, exercise, because obviously that's definitely going to help me maintain my weight, wasn't really open to me either. And so I started to low carb, and before you know it, the weight came off, my health improved, I just felt mentally much better. And I kind of, as they say, the rest is history. It's so that's kind of from a sort of personal journey. I mean, I suppose more recently I've been, as I know you have, Bitter, I've been sort of dabbling into the carnivore side of things as well. Because of a sort of flare of some health problems last summer, I thought, well, viewed it as really as kind of going to an elimination diet and to try and work out whether there were still elements of my diet that might not be agreeing with me. And I've been, I would say, kind of 95% carnivore since last about August, and I've sort of lost another about 20 pounds and a fat. And I've realized that actually, unfortunately, despite my absolute love of the stuff, dairy isn't my friend. And so that's something I've had to drop, but it's it's a small price to pay for the sort of improvements in health and skin and everything else. And
I've been doing carnivore. I was very strict the first period after starting, but now I'm like you. I'm like 90-95 percent carnivore, and I think that and you change your diet and I think that me and Hannah, we have been speaking a lot about this in earlier podcasts, that you need to adapt to different periods in your life as well, because you can't be that super ruley person, because your body, you get older, you maybe start working out, you go from an active work to sitting in by a desk all day, so you some things happens all the time. And it feels like, just as it felt with low carb high fat when I found it, I was going to eat like this for the rest of my life, but I know now that it might things might change in a couple of years, but the base is always low carb. One thing, in your job as a doctor, have you been advising your patients about low carb?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, I didn't obviously to start with, because it was there's that kind of mental transition that takes a bit of time. But, you know, certainly over probably the last 3, maybe 4 years, I've been integrating it into my, I would say on a daily basis, using it to treat, you know, predominantly patients with metabolic syndrome and diabetes, but also women particularly suffering with infertility, PCOS, patients with acne. You know, quite a broad spectrum of patients and supporting them through that. I actually ran in 2017. I got some funding. In Wales, we have kind of things called clusters, where groups of GP surgeries come together and they get funding to try and come up with innovative ways of delivering care and trying to improve services. And I pitched a kind of, well, I can save you some money on diabetic medication.
Yeah.
Let's give this a try. So basically they agreed, and I went in and I ran over 6 months. 26 patients went through my program, which was, as many people have done, it was a weekly group, an hour, and going through introduction to low carb and getting the patients. And then basically we had an average drop in HbA1c at the end of that time of over 15 millimeters. 15 points, and we had a drop of 15 millimeters of mercury in their systolic blood pressure. I think it was an average just under 7 kilos weight loss, 7 centimeters off the waist. And this was a group of generally men, actually, who were all in their sort of between 50s and 70s, and many of them had had diabetes for 20 years, and we had a 30%. You know, I know this controversial, but we had a 30% reversal/remission rate in the group who actually went down to have HbA1c's with no medication at under 42. So it was, I was really, really pleased. I kind of basically reproduced the results similar to what Dr. Unwin has managed to do, just to show, you know, I think many people say, well, it's the David Unwin effect. And of course, he is an incredibly inspirational guy. But and he himself would say, no, it's not me. It's the approach. It's everything. And I think being able to reproduce that in a, you know, quite simple setup with just an hour a week, no equipment really, apart from a set of scales and a tape measure, and suddenly you've achieved huge amounts of reductions in medications and remission in 30% of your participants.
So that's fantastic. And how is there a follow up on this now, or is are they going to continue to do this, or is it gone now since you're away?
The actual sort of weekly meetings are no longer going on. I mean, some of the patients were planning to continue to meet anyway, because initially I'd planned it as a sort of 6 week program, and then the next group would come in and have 6 weeks. But at the end of the first 6 weeks, they all said, "Can we keep coming?" So it ended up being kind of a rolling thing where we had like expert patients who could then kind of really support those newbies who came in and said, "Oh, this sounds a bit dangerous and saturated fat's terrible," and etc. And they would say, "Well, actually, you know, look at these trousers, you know, they're hanging off me and I feel so great." And it made a really big so that was really good. And I think that peer-to-peer support and you know, they were bringing in recipes and recipe books and was really, really valuable in giving it some impetus. And certainly there was some plan amongst the patients to continue to meet. I ran alongside it with the funding, because I recognised that I personally wasn't going to be able to be there as the catalyst. So I did do lots of training events as well in the area, talks for GPs and practice nurses, and gave them practical training on things like managing medication. Because obviously that's quite a big issue in terms of doing low carb safely, particularly in those patients. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, Yeah. How would you say, because people, doctors and nurses as well, that are into, that have discovered the benefits of low carb, both for diabetes and other problems, health problems, they have a problem to get an okay from the natural healthcare. What would you say, the Welsh healthcare, are they more open to this?
It's a difficult one. I mean, I think what I focused on is very much is following the work of David Unwin, because he's had such a positive response and won the NHS Innovator of the Year award for the work, and also has kind of interpreted the 2015 NICE guidelines, which are basically what GPs need to be shown to be following. There are points in that are very much around individualization of care, and also focus on low glycemic index carbs. Yeah. And obviously, as David Unwin points out, the only low glycemic index grains is quinoa, I believe. So yeah, he's kind of used that as a kind of a way around it. But I still came across from doctors and nurses. You know, some doctors were very sceptical, but generally there was a very positive response. I mean, one of the practice nurses I trained actually had a diabetic who lost 100 kilos.
Wow.
Which is just one of the highest or most successful stories I've heard. I mean, she just did such a fantastic job. And so they've really carried the work on. I mean, one of the issues I had was that the local dietetics department simultaneously were wanting to roll out the shakes program. Now, this is obviously prior to the direct study coming out, even. Yeah. Oh. And so they were very, very against my low carb plan. And even on one of the talks that I did, actually came and heckled me during my presentation, which was a bit of a shock. And were trying to shout me down and saying, "What about B12? It's what you're saying is dangerous." And, I was saying, so yes, I'd say there's been a mixed response, but I think. Generally, I think there's a really big move now, I think, within doctors and certainly of the younger end of the spectrum. Yes. There are many doctors who, I mean, there's a GP group on Facebook that I'm linked with, specifically with diabetes. It's not a low carb group. And recently there have been so many posts about low carb coming up. And then I've just been kind of like, well, if you want more info, just get in touch. You know, I've got a bit of knowledge about this. And you know, people going, I'm going to start a group. I'm going to do this. You know, loads of enthusiasm coming through. For the sort of lifestyle medicine approach and the sort of increasing rejection, I think, of the sort of excessive medicalization of everything. So I think there's a positive shift in the attitude of physicians, but...
Yes, it's like something is happening now. You see, from England, you know, the NHS and the there are programs that are supported from in Canada and everywhere around. So it's like something. It's what we call. I'm awaiting the catch up effect. Mm. First comes nothing, then comes nothing, and then pop off.
Yeah,
then everything comes, and it's because I think. It's very interesting because this is a movement. The knowledge has actually sprung from the grassroots about this, that when it comes to low carb and it has spread from the ground instead of from up higher levels, and I think that makes it big, because when people discover for themselves, because you can find a lot of information and knowledge online, and when they discover it and they spread it. It's unstoppable.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, I think one of the most beneficial things I found with running the group was, you know, you're taking a group of people who were just accepted that they were going to be on blood pressure tablets and diabetes tablets, and some of them on insulin forever, and that they had this, you know, chronic progressive disease that was just, and that every time they went back to have a check, you know, probably a little bit worse, and they needed a new tablet. And suddenly, I was saying to them, look. Here's an option. We're you know, a fork in the road. You can do something different here. And then they said, and then I won't want to see you. And they're like, and it was that shifting of kind of responsibility and empowerment that the patients, I think, really, really, they were like, suddenly like, well, why won't I need to come? Well, you won't need a diabetic check. She won't be diabetic anymore. And it was just this sort of sense of, you know, is this possible? And I think it really, it invigorated many of them to sort of feel like they could take control of their health again. And I think for men, you know, obviously that's something I personally have experienced as well, but it was so, as a doctor, to be handing that responsibility over, but in a positive way, rather than just telling somebody off and saying, well, you better stop smoking, you know, or you're going to kill yourself, and well, there we are, I've done my job. It was like actually giving the person the tools to make those life-changing, effects on diet and health, and for them in such a short amount of time, be able to see such big benefits. Just got them on board. It was really, really satisfying for me.
Yeah, it must be nice being a doctor, seeing those effects, and that they react so good to what you're telling them, instead of pushing more tablets and pills on them.
Absolutely.
But for keto ladies, you are talking about something totally different than diabetes.
Yeah.
You are going to talk about the insulin effects on puberty and breastfeeding, amongst other things. Can you give us a little hint about?
Well, it's something that's interested me, again, as these things often do come from your personal experience. And it was, I mean, as I mentioned, I'd always struggled with my weight, but certainly during my teens, I became a vegetarian when I was 15. As you've guessed, no longer a vegetarian. And my weight, I suppose I'd been a chubby child, but not particularly overweight, certainly by today's standards. I'm pretty tall, I'm 1.80 meters. So I'd sprung up when I was 12 or 13 and fairly skinny, became vegetarian, and then the weight just piled on. So by the time I was 18, I was probably, 240 pounds. So, really very big for a teenager. And so then fast forward to my early 30s, I get pregnant with my first child, no problems with my fertility at that point. And then when I had my daughter, I was very, very keen to breastfeed and had no reason to think there would be any problems. And, as new mothers are, you're worried that things aren't going to work out. But, I was absolutely adamant. I do not want top-ups with formula. I don't want, I'm going to do this. The milk will come. Everything will be fine. And the milk just didn't come. I ended up back in hospital with my daughter at day 5. She'd lost 20% of her body weight.
Wow.
And she had a sodium of 156. Ended up having to have all sorts of tests and things done because she was ended up on a drip. I mean, as a doctor, I just feel, awful that I'd let things get there. But
I can see that, yeah.
But at the time, you're thinking, well, something must be going in. But actually, and then I started investigating this condition called insufficient glandular tissue, which is where if during the sort of critical phases of your puberty, if you're not getting insulin can inhibit the effects of luteinizing hormone, etc., and actually cause problems and a lack of development of breast tissue. And I personally think there's probably an epidemic of this that's totally unseen, because with so many women, and so many particularly women who've been obese in puberty, will likely have some degree of this. They might have normal appearing breasts, they might but then they can't breastfeed properly, and everyone says, well, you didn't try hard enough, you just wanted to formula feed anyway. And it's that whole thing around then those effects of then those babies ending up on formula, which is obviously full of N6 oils, and then how that's going to then prime that next generation to have exactly the same problems with obesity. And I think I'm just interested in the whole, a lot of Kate Shanahan's work and Rhonda Patrick, and looking at the epigenetics and the kind of generational effects of a lot of these issues. So that's kind of what I suppose where, so that's my personal experience with it. And then also then how I've realized that actually that's very likely what happened to me. There's this sort of bigger picture around fertility, around puberty, around breastfeeding, around safe childbirth, that we're just not really seeing necessarily the links to diet. It's just babies' heads don't fit through women's pelvises these days. That's why, we're just lucky we can have cesareans. And it's like, well, we probably wouldn't have got so far as a species if, we're not, if we had had such a horrific infant mortality rate. And you look back to hunter-gatherer times, and we didn't have such a horrific infant mortality rate. It was only once we became agriculturalists. So there's so much talk about and tease out in this area, and I find it utterly fascinating, and I hope the audience will as well.
Yeah, yes, I'm sure they will. And we just published the
the schedule as far as we've come now with it. And the subjects are, so it's going to be really interesting. And that's the fun thing with our events, because the subjects are so interesting to also the speakers, because they get the included in the discussions with the guests and everything. And it's going to be awesome to hear your listen to your lecture and your workshop, Angharad. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think you will be really glad to meet all the wonderful speakers and guests, because this is a very, Keith Ladies is a very special event. And it's the only low carb event in the world focusing on women's health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why haven't anyone come to think of that before? So if you want to meet, Angharad, is something more?
I was just going to agree with you totally on that. That I think women's health is often at the bottom of the pile, and things around, the impact. There's so many topics that I think aren't. We don't see on the Twitter discussions things like the impact of oral contraceptives or, depot progesterones that, so many of our young women are receiving as contraception. Now, I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't have options in terms of contraception, because obviously being able to control your fertility is a really important part of actually having a fulfilling life. These topics are not really central to any discussions at the moment around it, and certainly within the low carb world, the keto world. So I think having a conference focused on women that you've set up is just, it's a fantastic opportunity to really say what's special and unique about women and what do we need to be thinking about. And in the same way, there are obviously things specific to men, talk about insulin growth factor and effect on prostates and all sorts of stuff.
But we don't care about them now.
No, we just care about the ladies.
We are talking about the ladies this time. So I can't wait to see you very, very soon, it feels like.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So have a lovely time in Cyprus up until then, and we'll meet in Majorca.
Yes, we will.
Later on in March. Thank you very much, Angharad, for letting me talk to you this morning.
I look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.